Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he has written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Michael Shackelford is the force behind the websites Wizard of Odds, Wizard of Vegas, and Wizard of Macau. An actuary by profession, Michael has been analyzing the whole gamut of casino games since 1995. His Wizard of Odds website explains the best strategies for 140 different casino games. Michael is also the author of Gambling 102, The Best Strategies for All Casino Games, and is a former adjunct professor of gaming math at UNLV. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you will be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Mike.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
I'm Mike Shackelford.
Our guest tonight is Bad Boy Hollywood Dave Stan, a successful blackjack player, poker player, tournament player, game show host, and now game show player. We'll be talking to Dave in a little bit. Last week's show was with poker writer Ed Miller. Just before he went on the air, he told me that if any of the listeners bought anything from his website before the end of the month, they'd get a $5 discount. Well, I didn't write it down, and I didn't mention it on the air, but it is still in effect. If you go to his website, notedpokerauthority.com, enter in the code EDGE, E-D-G-E, you'll get the discount. If you happen to buy something in the last week, and not knowing about the discount, contact Ed, and you will get it. We received two emails to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com that I want to talk about tonight. The first one deals with cashing slot club points at a casino that require you to do so in the form of free play. Here's a scenario. Now think, I'm going to lay it out, and then I'm going to go on to a different subject to let you think about it for a while. And then we'll come back and I'll give you what I think is the right answer. Assume you're planning on earning 1,000 points on two separate days just because doing so gives you something that's worth having. Like this month at the South Point, playing 200 points gives you something special. So you're planning on playing $1,000 to get 1,000 points on both those days. One of those days is a double point day, and one of those days is a single point day. Also assume that you have $500 of free play to download and that you had decided to download it one of those 2 days, either downloading on the double point day or on the single point day. So my question is, does it matter whether you download this $500 in free play on the double point day or on the single point day? And I want you to think about it in the two scenarios. The first case is like what happens at both South Point and Palms, and that is you earn points when you're playing off your free play. The second case, there are a few casinos, Silverton is one, where you download free play and you don't earn points while you're playing off your free play. So think about both of those ways, and then we'll get back to the answer in a few minutes. Another email to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com is about blackjack. Assume a player has an 18 and he stands, and the dealer ends up with a soft 17, perhaps an ace-6 or maybe ace-deuce-4. Assume the dealer stops taking cards, even though the house rules say they should take another card. Now she pays off the player because she had 17, player had 18. And as long as nobody says anything, they move on to the next hand. Life goes on happily ever after. But let's say the player speaks up and says, wait, you should take another card. Now, this can't help her It could hurt her. Can't help the player. It may help her get into heaven. I'm not sure about that. Now, in the first scenario, assume you're at the table, but this decision doesn't affect you. Perhaps you were dealt a blackjack and paid off immediately, or perhaps you busted, and so it didn't affect you. So, and the only person who it affected was the one who spoke up. Would you say anything to that player, such as, keep your mouth shut, please, or however you want to phrase that? The second scenario is, if you were a player and this adversely affected you, what would you do about it? Let's say you had the 18, the dealer was willing to stop at soft 17, but when reminded, drew a 3, now has a 20, and you lose. So if you had your, when you were paid, since you know it was in effect, you took back your bet immediately, so it's just an empty square. But when the dealer corrected it, they figured out how much money you had out there and demanded the money back. A player wanted to know, was the casino in its legal rights to demand the money back? So, good. That's the first question. Michael, what do you think about this?
This comes up a lot on my forum, and I've seen both situations. In the first situation where you would normally be paid on an error, but another player chimes in and corrects the dealer, which causes it to go against you. If that player is still in the hand, I can understand it. Perhaps this player, their morals would not let them take money that doesn't belong to them, and they would feel it's not morally right to take advantage of a dealer mistake. I can respect that. And I would go along with it. I can't complain. But if that player is already out of the hand, say that player had busted already before me, and then corrects the error, then I would give them, the stink eye, why don't you keep your mouth shut? I wouldn't say it, but I would give them that look.
Would you wave one finger at them?
No, I would not. I would not take it that far. And I'm reminded of a situation where I was playing some new game at the Golden Nugget, and I was just getting killed. And the dealer made an error, and I saw a player about to chime in and correct her. And this error would have been in the player's favor. And I went to him, I said, shh, keep your mouth shut.
The player's favor?
Yes, it would have gone in everyone's favor. And so he kept his mouth shut, and everyone got paid when they weren't supposed to. And then he made a remark like, that goes against everything I believe in. And it made me feel really badly that I chastised this player for being honest.
Huh. In my first novel, Sex, Lies, and Video Poker, there's a scene took place at the Luxor, I think, where there was this $200 bettor at the table and a $5 bettor, the wife of a $5 bettor, chimed in on one of these situations because she always, it was right to do the right thing, even though she wasn't in the hand. This $200 bettor lost the hand he would have won and used very colorful language to tell her where to stick it. And in the novel, since that $200 player was losing big and drinking big, the casino wanted to keep him. The pit boss immediately wrote out a comp for a buffet, two lunch buffets, for these $5 players, and said, "Go away." And so anyway, that's how it happened in the novel. Okay, so back to free play.
We asked about a second situation where the where the casino asks for the money back after an error.
Okay. Yes.
In my opinion, they have every right to ask for it back. And if they ask, you should give it back to them without argument.
Yeah, and they should, whether you argue or not, they have a right to demand it back, which is far more than asking it back. They have a right to demand it back.
Right, and I think that for $100 or less, they're not going to press it too far. They might say, either give us the money or leave. But if it was for $10,000, then they might take legal action if you refuse to.
And sometimes it might not be clear what the bet was. where it was a stack of chips, and the dealer paid you off with an equal stack of chips, just made sure it was the same color in the same stack, and they don't know for sure what the bet was. So that can happen occasionally, but dealers know pretty well whether they have 18 chips or 22, and they can get pretty close.
And sometimes the way such stories get told is the player asks to see proof. And I don't think that the casino is going to lie to a player if they make this confrontation. But if the casino is asked for proof, I think they should provide it. But I don't think the player should ask for it.
Okay. Let's go back to the slot club situation. You redeeming your points. Does it matter if you redeem them on single point day or double point day? And the answer is it doesn't matter at all. As long as you're going to be playing $1,000 coin in, whether that $1,000 came from your pocket or came from free play, it's all the same as cash. Now, the only time that it matters is if this is your last play ever at this casino, you're leaving town, you're never planning to come back here, well then, yeah, playing on double point days gives you a little bit more. In our particular case, a dollar or two on $500 a play, but you could have enough so that it makes a difference. So do you have anything to add on that?
No, I agree with you.
All right. So, Michael, why don't you introduce our guest, Hollywood Dave Stan? We have never had a Hollywood star on our show before.
I'd be happy to. Hollywood Dave Stan is known as the bad boy of blackjack, to begin. Dave grew up in Cleveland and, like many gifted advantage players, excelled at lots of non-gambling games like rummy, chess, and spades. After graduating from Kent State with an honors degree in theater, he moved to Hollywood to try to make it as an actor. While waiting for his big break, he discovered blackjack, read lots of books about it, and was an immediate success at it, traveling back and forth between L.A. and Vegas. On his white website, Dave jokes that gambling paid for his acting habit. The big break he was looking for came in 2004 when he was running up against many of the biggest names in blackjack on a televised blackjack tournament called the World Series of Blackjack Tour. After that, he was a frequent player. After that, he was a frequent player on the World Blackjack Tour. His on-camera banter earned him the nickname the Bad Boy of Blackjack. After that, he traveled the world counting cards until he wore out his welcome doing that. Later, Dave turned his attention to poker, teaming up with Annie Duke, who was a former guest on this show. The last 8 months, Dave has been living in San Francisco on a project he was sworn to secrecy about until today. And we'll ask Dave in a minute what he's been up to. He said just today that he's been released from his gag order and he's allowed to talk about it. I would like to add that Dave is a member of Mensa, which makes me jealous because not only have I failed to get on game shows, which Dave has, but I also failed the Mensa test.
How stupid.
Yeah, I'm in the 99%. I do see Dave every year at the Blackjack Hall of Fame, and I always enjoy chatting and betting with him. I hope he won't mind saying that in real life he is really quite the gentleman and not the bad boy. So, Dave, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Well, thank you. Wow, what an amazing introduction.
Just Hi, like guys. You How wrote it, you? Huh?
No, more like he wrote it and said, is this right? And I said, yeah, sure, let's go with that.
All right, so your book, Hollywood Blackjack, how is that different from other How to Play Blackjack books?
All right, well, I was instructed by Mr. Shackelford. I'm not allowed to swear or anything like that on this program, but that is why my book is different. It is full of the real language from the trenches, me traveling and speaking my mind. I think there's a lot of blackjack books out there. There's a lot of books on how to count cards and how to have proper camouflage techniques, and many are done very well, some better than others. And I thought, well, I'm not going to reinvent the wheel here, but I can certainly put it in a form of language that is probably not in any other blackjack book. So it's kind of just written a stream of consciousness dialogue with all the proper strategy and camouflage and stories, but pretty colorful language. So
it's the cuss words that make your book different.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. That's the cliffs on that.
Well, if I may butter up Dave a little bit more,
okay.
I think it's a very good book. And when somebody who I think is a recreational gambler looking to break into card counting, and I know this person is not going to be using the Omega count or the Houston Advanced Point Count. They just want something simple, and they need all the basic questions answered, like why does counting work, and money management, and just the absolute basics, and they need it. They don't want a lot of math. I always recommend Dave's book because it's written in very easy to understand language, and it's interjected with lots of his own stories. So it's a great way to get the feel of what card counting is all about, as well as learning the basics about how to do it.
I felt like when I wrote it, I had a little angel and a little devil on my shoulder. And yeah, I had my little Johnny Chang on one shoulder saying, you know, make sure that just because you're simplifying the language, you're not actually putting anything in there that's incorrect. So I can definitely say I had Don Schlesinger proofread it for me and give me the thumbs up that yes, this is accurate, this is mathematical, this is factual, this is advice that if players use these charts, these decision matrices, that this is plus EV material. But then on the other side, I wanted to make it entertaining and accessible. And let's face it, a lot of great books that we may be very familiar with to a newer, you know, kind of casual player, they might be a little bit put off by some of the language, some of the, you know, the calculations, the math, and I wanted to break it down in a way that was understandable but and fun, but still 100% accurate. So.
And you were successful at it. Very good book.
Thank you.
He mentioned the name Johnny in there. Johnny was the head of the MIT Blackjack team for 10 years. We haven't had John on the show. We have had his wife on the show, Lori C. But that's who he's talking about in terms of plus EV. And John cares more about EV than Lori does. We established that during the show. Now, in your book, you indicated that your tournament strategy is improved over what other players use. You said basically if Stanford Wong's in the same tournament, it doesn't make sense to use Stanford Wong's tournament strategy in order to try to beat Stanford Wong. So you also indicate that maybe in the future you're going to write a book about telling what you think proper tournament strategy is. Now, has that book come anywhere near completion, or is that just something that's not going to happen?
I've got most of it complete on my laptop and in reams of notebooks, but in terms of it seeing the light of day, I think there was a point in my life when I was doing a ton of the televised blackjack shows and I was traveling on the tournament blackjack circuit, and I intentionally kind of withheld it because I was playing against the best players in the world and I just didn't want them to have every detail. I was still profiting too much, and I figured, what am I going to make on selling this book? I'm going to, you know, how many people are really going to buy an advanced blackjack tournament strategy book? What kind of, you know, return would I expect from that versus the return that I had playing against players who didn't have all the details of my strategy? So I said, well, I'm going to hold off on that. And now, years later, I'm just not certain that there's a healthy enough advanced tournament kind of culture out there. It's unfortunately, blackjack tournaments are just a function of casino marketing departments at this point as a ruse to kind of get high rollers in, get them busted out, and get them on the tables. And we don't really have that that renaissance anymore of a blackjack tournament for a blackjack tournament's sake. So I'm just not convinced that there's as big a market for it.
Okay.
You mentioned Stanford Wong, and I mean, that's a really you know, great way to kind of summarize it. I think casino tournament strategy, specifically, you know, his section on blackjack tournament strategy is, you know, and we all agree that that's the Bible. You know, that really presented it. It laid it out, and it makes 100% sense. However, I think the one fallacy of it is that it assumes you're playing against players who don't have access to most of that information. So if you're playing against, you know, the field, that's perfect strategy almost every time. But if I'm playing against Stanford Wong and Johnny Chang and James Grosjean and you guys, I'm not going to do not only what you expect me to do, but what ultimately isn't effective. If we're all doing the exact same thing, we're literally just flipping coins to determine who wins the tournament. So I don't want to flip coins. I want a way to embrace a little bit higher variance. I think a hallmark of my strategy was essentially an aggression index, which allowed you to kind of categorize the the skill level of the players. And the higher the skill level, the more concentrated the skill on a particular table, the higher kind of variance plays and deviations you'd make from Wong in order to maybe embrace a shorter-term negative EV. But if you do manage to get a small lead over that field, that particular field, you know you can lock that in because you know predictably what their best move and their range of bets is going to be in advance because you already read the book that they're playing off of. So combination of a couple things.
Yeah, I've played a lot of blackjack tournaments, and most players are recreational and pretty mm-hmm. easy to beat. But a lot of them, I think, do play Wong strategy or something very close to it. And I know a lot of very advanced tournament blackjack players, and there has almost seemed to be a strategy to combat the Wong strategy, and nobody's ever put it in writing, but it's often talked about from player to player.
Exactly.
Okay, now in the introduction, I mentioned that after blackjack, you were involved with poker, and now you've been involved with some project in San Francisco the last 8 months, and your website says that you haven't been allowed to say much about it, but you tell me this morning that you're allowed to tell the world what you've been up to lately. So I'd like to give you the opportunity right now.
Well, I mean, fast forward after the blackjack, I got very heavily into poker, traded blackjack and poker lessons with Annie Duke, and I certainly came out with the good end of that deal. She made a little bit in blackjack, but I made a lot more in poker. More than that, just fell in love with the game.
She's made a bet running poker.
She's
being a commissioner of a now defunct.
Unfortunately, that's big business sometimes, right? But at the end of the day, I ended up being a sponsored pro player for years and traveling the world as a poker ambassador and just falling in love with the game. And then had a chance last year, 2 years ago, to start getting behind the scenes a little bit, do some consulting, and start kind of building the games in the background. And to me, starting as a blackjack player and then getting on the circuit and then getting on TV and then writing a book and then going into poker and kind of going up that ladder. For me, the last frontier was getting on the other side of the table and building these really awesome games that other people get to play. So after the, destruction of online poker last year, where we were all told we couldn't play with our money online, what we could do in, real life at casinos and buying lottery tickets at 7-Eleven, but we can't do that online. That's a crime. I had to, of course, adapt. And I looked for consulting jobs over in Europe and ended up finding an awesome opportunity here in San Francisco with a brand new startup that had an amazing game already on Facebook, kind of a polytheistic god game called Idol Worship. And they wanted to have their second game be a poker game. They wanted to do a virtual social poker game on Facebook and then moving on to mobile, iPads, and Android, but have it be with the most amazing art you've ever seen. I think if anyone's played online poker, you know that the graphics are very simple. It's late 90s graphics for the most part. Sometimes by design, if you're multi-tabling 20 tables at once, you want the simplicity. But that being said, Facebook has kind of, had these Zyngas and these other companies pop up, and, they've definitely had their entries, but nothing has ever really approached the level of amazing, awesome graphics and still had that pure professional player kind of gameplay aesthetic. There's never really been a marriage of the entertainment of poker and the high-level integrity of the game. So they made me an offer. I moved to San Francisco 8 months ago, and I've been working alongside an amazing team of designers and developers and artists up here for 8+ months, building an incredible new social poker game called Fresh Deck Poker. And it will be an alpha in about a week, beta a month after that. And it was built with the intention of when we have the possibility of regulation changing, it's ready to go for real money poker as well. So back in the day, online poker used to be all the .coms, and then they had the sister .net website, which is kind of free to play. Right now, social gaming is something like 20% of that market, which it's just huge. It's blowing up. And when you talk about mobile, everyone's got a smartphone right now. and that market is blowing up as well. I really thought, you know what, I'm going to take these lemons of the DOJ shutting down online poker in the USA, and I'm going to turn it into the lemonade of let's get ahead of the curve. Let's see where this is going. Let's create the coolest poker game that I could possibly imagine with other people who had the freedom and the capital from a really awesome investor to just sit down and spend months just creating something awesome. So I'm really excited to, you know, launch this thing and let everybody take a look at it in the next few weeks. But, yeah, so it's been a really big pleasure, me getting to come to work and just create a really cool game every single day. You know, it's a tough life. What can I tell you?
And if people wanted to take a look at it, how would they do that?
Well, it's called Fresh Deck Poker, and it's actually so new that it's actually not out there yet. We're just doing the first press starting this week. And, you know, search for it on Facebook.
So you'll send Michael or me an email.
Oh, absolutely.
And we'll make an announcement
in the next few days. You'll start to see some press and some things on Facebook. And from there, it's just going to blow up. You can check my website or my Twitter feed as well. But the company is called Idle Games, and they're just on the forefront of just the most amazing quality. Check out their other game called Idle Worship, IDLE, on Facebook, and you'll get an idea of the level of
it's
quality.
It's IDLE, huh?
These guys are fanatic about quality, and they won't accept anything less.
All right.
Well, IDLE makes them sound pretty lazy. But okay.
Anything but. We make it look lazy. But
okay. Now, for a while, you were a host on made-for-TV blackjack events.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you have an agent out there actively trying to arrange for another such gig. Any realistic chance of that happening?
Well, I had, before I took this gig, about a year and a half ago, I actually produced my own pilot episode called Grifting, which was a series of me traveling around the world. And since I've learned blackjack, I've learned poker, I've learned a little bit about VP, but not as much as you guys, of course. I figured, you know what? My learning curve is much sharper. I can go find a game I've never played before, and I can learn from the master, and I can get very proficient at it much faster than the average player. So I thought, that's a cool idea for a show. You know, punk, you know, smack-talking Hollywood Dave travels the world, tracks down the epicenter of different games, learns from the masters, and then tries to, you know, beat people. Everything from, you know, street chess in New York to Mahjong over in China to, you know, playing darts in Irish pubs, you know, everything I could get my hands on. And we filmed a...
You never
pilot.
Called me to learn video poker. What's wrong with you?
Well, you were on the short list, of course.
But
we had to
okay.
get greenlit for the series, and then when it came time for the video poker episode, guess who I was going to call?
Talk is cheap. I'm still waiting for that call.
Well, I'm still waiting for the show to get picked up. So it's out there. It's, you know, we've talked with a lot of networks. We'll see where that goes. That's probably the biggest thing. Right now, you know, I've shifted my focus. I came out to be an actor, like you said, moved into gambling, then moved into this side of the business. And, you know, unless it's, you know, a big concept show or something, I'm not doing the day-to-day auditions like I used to. I still have an agent and a manager. You know, something really huge comes up, they let me know. But I'm not hunting it down with as much fervor as I used to.
Well, that sounds like a good show. Speaking of shows, I hear you were on Wheel of Fortune recently. Are you allowed to tell us about that? Because it hasn't aired yet.
Well, no, but my girlfriend was on Wheel of Fortune. I got to make the cameo when she, you know, solved the final puzzle at the end. I got to bum rush the stage and hang out with Pat Sajak and Vanna. That's going to be on, her episode's going to be on September 19th. And, no, I'm not gonna spoil it for you. I'm not gonna spoil it for
but
you.
But an interesting thing for our listeners is, what's the process to go about getting on a game show? Because it looks like, boy, that's easy money. I could solve that puzzle if I was on there. So how do you get on a show like that?
Well, she did that, and she did Deal or No Deal. And both times, she, God bless her, she goes to these open calls with like hundreds or thousands of people. And just works her way just because she's charming and wonderful and funny, and God knows why she's with me. But she makes it all the way through. She's got on. I've done a few game shows. I did Friend or Foe, I did Taboo, and I did, you know, geez, another one. Not as big as those, but I found that as an actor in L.A., I had maybe a little bit of an edge because the casting people who cast these shows, they all kind of work in the same circles. So, you know, they end up developing a short list of, yes, he's a good contestant, she's really great on TV, and they pass these lists around. So, you know, I think the hardest part is getting noticed. Once you're noticed, you know, they start passing it around, it gets easier. But basically, you know, you can be really, really smart, you know, and I know you guys are, but I think what's just as important or more important from a TV producer's point of view is this person going to be great on TV? Do they have a vibrant energy? Are they, you know, spontaneous? Are they natural? Are they, you know, do they have fun kind of personalities? And I think, unfortunately, you know, that's more important than are they really smart people who are going to solve these puzzles. I think they try to get both, but they're going to err on the side of the TV-friendly more often than not.
Now, I tried out for The Weakest Link, and unfortunately, I didn't get picked. But
you were The Weakest Link?
I was.
No, he was weaker than The Weakest Link.
But there were hundreds of people, and they interviewed every single person for like 1 minute, and you just went around the room, and it
right.
took a long time. And
right.
I got the impression that a lot of the other people were faking it, like they were trying to stand out above the crowd, and
right.
I wasn't seeing the true person. Should you do that, or is that what they're looking for, is somebody who's going to really try hard to be exciting and friendly and...
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I mean, just like you said, you were there, and you're not in that industry. You're not a casting director, and you could tell, oh God, these guys are faking it. What do you think they're thinking about that? You know, I think they are genuinely looking for a natural, fun, energetic person who doesn't come across as showy or fake, but you know, definitely has something that's compelling to watch. And so yeah, just turning it on and going over the top. Although it might have worked a little bit for me when I did the Hollywood Dave shtick, it's not always the right strategy to use for that. You just genuinely got to have that light and that energy. And unfortunately, like you said, you have a minute to do this, and you're sitting around for hours and hours sometimes waiting for your 1 minute. And that honestly kind of wears you down. So when it's finally time for your minute, not only have you sat there all day, but you've watched other people, and you've got, you know, you're critical of them, you're critical of the process to some extent, and sometimes it's even harder to be really natural and fun and bubbly in that one brief second after you've got all this kind of weight on your shoulders from sitting around waiting for this moment.
And that's what happened to me, is I was a little bit
sure.
angry at the inefficiency of the process, and
absolutely.
By the time it got to me, you know, I was grumpy. And
right.
And
there's a time and a place to be
me.
Grumpy. You know, save it for when you're outside, call your friends, tell them what a horrible experience you had, but in that moment, you just got to let that go, because you know what? They don't care. If they're going to see you for a minute, they're never going to see you again unless you do something that's going to, you know, really stand out. So, but it has to be organic. You know, it really does. It's not really a formula except to say be yourself, be natural, and just have a good time. I think if you're having a great time, then they're going to have a great time.
Okay, I'll remember that the next time I try to get on the show.
There you go.
Well, be natural if your natural is fun and exciting. If
exactly right, and if you're
if your natural
isn't fun
is
exciting,
not fun and exciting, well,
maybe don't waste your time. You know,
well, could
know.
Be, could be. Pick a shot.
Yeah.
All right, now friend or foe?
Yes.
We got some questions about that, but first, why don't you tell our audience the basic premise behind the game?
Shackelford, you're so mad at me about this, dude.
I am.
Has he told you about this?
And I'm going to grill you about
yes.
it.
Oh well, this, I under well.
But let's start by...
You made the only correct decision, no matter what Shackelford says.
There you go. Thank you for that.
I mean, there's just no doubt in mind how to play the game. But why don't you give the strategy?
Here's Cliff Notes. It's a trivia show. You team up with a stranger. There's multiple teams of, you know, pairs of strangers. What is it? Three, I think. So there's six of you. And then you're randomly paired up with someone you don't know. And then the three teams of two strangers... go to kind of a segregated, you know, area from one another, so they can't really communicate with the other groups. And then you answer a series of trivia questions. I don't remember the exact format, but basically you get money and prizes for answering correctly, and you have to work together in situations to get the right answers. So, you know, eventually, you know, the lowest scoring team gets kicked off, and then eventually the highest scoring team makes it all the way to the final round, and you get the bonus round, and you eventually end up in this friend or foe, you know, signature showdown, where you've got all the money that you have made together with this stranger, and you stand up there with the host, who coincidentally is Kennedy from the VJ from MTV from back in the 80s. How cool is that for the nerds who grew up with that? I loved it. And you have to vote friend or foe in secret. So the premise is, if you both vote friend, then you split the money that you've made and you go home. If you both vote foe, then nobody gets the money, and you both go home with nothing. But if one of you votes friend and one of you votes foe, The person who voted foe gets all the money, and the person who voted friend gets nothing, and that's it. So, you know, it's kind of psychological in the sense that before you vote, they put you face to face, and the host will prompt you to talk to each other and say, you know, now you have a chance to plead your case, to convince the other player to vote friend, and you know, you have a little dialogue. And so, of course, there's a lot of really disingenuous moments there when the player who is intending on voting foe is making really nice, or maybe the player is just saying, forget it, I'm just going to vote foe, or maybe they're both genuinely nice people who are both going to vote friends. So you see all the three different possibilities, and that becomes just as fun as trying to play along at home and guess the right answers as trying to figure out, you know, who's going to vote which way. So
the appropriate strategy is to plan on betting foe, but find a way to convince your partner to be friend, maybe begging him that you really need the money to go to college, and please don't sabotage me.
I would like to say that's the selfish strategy.
Also the proper strategy.
Pleading, that's one strategy, I agree. You know, genuinely being really nice and saying, I'm going to vote friend, whatever you know, guilt trip maybe, that's another. You see every kind of, you know, every shade of the human condition in that moment when you're talking about money. But I think, Bob, you have it right, is that, you know, the correct play is to vote foe. Because if you vote friend, your two possibilities are half the money or none of the money. If you vote foe, your two possibilities are all of the money or none of the money. So you double your EV by going foe, and you don't actually give up anything. You're completely free-rolling, because half the time you're not getting any money anyway.
But what would happen if everyone followed that strategy?
Oh, you and the metagame. We're talking about, you know, this is, it's like you're playing a hand of poker. And you have the nuts on the river, and do you try to extract half the value or all the value, you know? In other words, and this is why, Michael, you have a disagreement with me. Of course, I was the really nice guy who the guy was saying, I have kids, and you know, I know you're a theater major, and I'm going to buy season tickets for my whole family, and please, I really need this money. And I said, absolutely, we're going to stick together on this one. I'm going to lie to your face as I'm pressing this foe button right underneath the table right now. And I, of course, took all the money, and I hope I don't run into him in a parking lot somewhere. That would suck.
Speaking of which, if he wrote to you, or somehow you found a way to find him, would you, and he asked for half the money, what would you do?
Well, you can't give it to him now.
No way. It was a fair game. We all came in with the same rules. We played the game. One of us won. What wouldn't be fair is to say, these are the rules of the game, but really everyone's supposed to vote friend. Stop. Then let's go on the show where you just, you know, if you win money, you take home the money. That's not this show. This show is, if you win money, you have a chance to take home the money or none of the money. That's that show.
Now, but you said, I am going to vote friend, and then you voted foe. Do you admit that you lied, or would you say that was just like poker banter and part of the game?
That is the game in that moment. I'm a very honest person to a fault, and I will tell you exactly what I think of you. But we're playing a game. We both agree in advance on the rules of this game. That's the important part. This isn't me in a parking lot, you know, lying to someone, say, oh, my car's broken down, I need 20 bucks, and then really I'm just making 20 bucks. We both know in advance what's going on here. So, you know, there's been full disclosure in that moment. That's the game, my friend.
So when you watch other people play this, and there's one person who goes friend and one person who goes foe, do you look at the guy who votes friend and say, what a sucker?
No, and I don't think, to be fair, I don't think the other guy's a sucker. I think the real strategy in this game, more than anything else, isn't answering the questions. It's not, you know, even your choice at all. It's irrelevant. The only thing that's important is that the other person votes friend. That's what it comes down to. And so your entire strategy has to be, how do I do what I can do to increase the odds of that person voting friend? Now, then you could decide, I'm going to vote friend too, because I don't really want to maximize my EV here. But if you've just spent all your time and energy to worry about the EV of him voting friend, then that's all you can do. That's the only thing you can try to affect through strategy.
And I've been watching old episodes of a similar show called The Golden Balls, which it played in England. And on that show, they always interviewed both people after the show privately to give them a chance to say what they had to say. And when you see people that voted faux, they often say exactly what you just said, that this is just how you win the game. You have to convince the other guy to vote friend, and then you vote faux.
And they're right.
But I still want to say for the record that...
there's no record here, man.
You've said it four times, Michael, already.
If I were on the show, I would vote friend.
Well, you can't be on the show because it doesn't air anymore. I think it only lasted two or three seasons.
All right. Well, I still say shame on you.
All right. Now, earlier, when the first time Michael mentioned your name, he said at the last blackjack ball, you made a bet on the presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we got about 2 minutes.
All right.
So without saying who you favor for president, because that would be a very...
We won't touch politics. We'll just talk about the...
But how do you... Yeah, it's like, how do you handicap that?
Hey, it's like sports betting. You don't necessarily bet on your favorite teams. You just bet on where you see the edge. So regardless of what, you know, Michael and I are going to actually go in and vote for... This was back in very early January. Mitt Romney looked like he had some serious contention from Santorum and from Gingrich. There was a couple weeks there where it actually kind of looked like, you know, we all kind of thought Romney was going to pull away, but there were a few weeks there where the polls were pretty neck and neck, and Santorum was winning a state here and there, and Gingrich was getting all the money from Sheldon Adelson. So we thought, okay, I gave him 2.3-1, 2,300 to my 1,000. He has Romney to win the general election. I have any other result, which, of course, at this point is just Obama winning. But at the time, I thought, well, I'll give him the bump because, hey, if Romney doesn't even get the Republican nomination, the bet's already over. I'm a lock to win it. I think the true odds on, like, Pinnacle were something like 1.8 or 9 at the time, so I definitely gave him a little bit of a favor. And then, of course, like 2 weeks later, it was just very clear that Romney was going to walk away with it. And now it's a terrible bet, you know? So I'm going to have to watch the polls as we get closer to Election Day and maybe lay off some of the action in Vegas betting on Romney to win it if it looks like it's pretty much a coin flip.
The odds right now suggest Obama has a 56% chance of winning.
And I saw a poll recently that gave Romney a slight edge. So
on Fox News?
Yeah, which one of that was that your friend Rush or your friend Bill or which one?
Actually, I thought it was CNN,
that?
Which would normally vote.
Your friend Wolf told you that. Okay.
So I don't know. Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Dave.
We didn't get through all our questions. We may have you on again.
Yeah, no problem. You check me out on HollywoodDave.com, and I'll have updates there. Or look for Fresh Deck Poker, baby, on Facebook and mobile coming soon.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Got it. Rock on, guys. Bye.
So, Michael, what did we learn tonight? Friend or foe aside, because we know what you were disappointed about that.
Yeah, but that was a really fun interview. I enjoyed it a lot and hope Dave will come back. And I definitely learned some advice about how to get on a game show in the first place. And I'm just fascinated with game show strategy once you're on it, especially shows like The Price is Right. And I've always wanted to be on a game show, and I've tried twice and failed both times. So hopefully Dave's advice will help out a little bit. And to be honest, I already knew that because I've been on some reality shows, and the producers always say, be yourself, but also crank it up a little bit. Make it good television. And you have to interpret that however you will.
Well, I've actually been on 4 game shows, and I have a really... interesting story next week, with your permission. It's kind of a 10 or 15 minute story told right. With your permission, I think I should tell it.
Right. Bob didn't want to toot his own horn, but Bob has been on Jeopardy before, and I've heard him tell the story privately before, and I think it's a great story. And I would, next week we don't have a guest, so we're going to be talking to Bob about his game show experiences, especially on Jeopardy.
Yeah, and actually a lot of other things too. We have, partly because Michael posted on his website, tell us what questions you'd like to have answered. We have a list of about 10 or 15 or 20 different questions sent into Gambling with an Edge as to what people would like answered. So we're going to answer a bunch of them.
Yeah, and we going forward, we may not have a guest every single week, so we are begging a little bit harder for listener questions. Gotcha. And send them to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com.
Very good. The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else. In July, every Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday, if you play 200 points between 3 a.m. and 11 p.m., you get to spin the wheel for prizes. Prizes include $20 free play, $50 free play, 2,500 points, or $750, food coupons, 2x points all day, ice cream cone, and a logo t-shirt. Although there is a random element involved, generally speaking, the better your mailer is, the better gifts you get on the wheel spin. To me, the best prize by far is 2x points, which is good between the time you get the award to midnight. Therefore, I do my 200 points relatively early in the day, so if I'm fortunate enough to get the multiplier, I have time to take advantage of it. So far this month, I have gotten that multiplier once. On Mondays and Wednesdays, between 1 p.m. and 9 p.m., $1,000 will be random given away to a player every half hour. At the Palms, the weekly drawings take place Friday, Saturday, and Sunday evening. 10 players cash each of these gifts with a top prize of $4,000. The top three get to pick from five. And so in those five, I think the numbers are 4,000, 2,000, 1,000, 750, and 500. And then the prices go down from fourth down, they're fixed. With the lowest you can win is 500. Now, over the this past weekend, I decided to play a lot, and I was actually called all three nights. And which was good. And so there is a lot of correlation between who gets called on each of the nights simply because of how much they played. But I haven't played at all this week and won't be in the drawings this week. So part of the strategy of these drawings is to pick and choose when you're going to play. They have PEWs, which is play, earn, and win. Most months it's Monday, Wednesday, Friday. In July, it's actually 5 days a week. Through the end of the month, your gifts are mostly alcohol-based. You want bottles of booze and things related to alcohol. At videopoker.com, the free monthly contest always takes place between the 23rd of the month and the end of the month. That means it starts next Monday. The game this month is Ultimate X 10 Play. Ultimate X is the most difficult video poker game I know about. The way it works is you bet 10 coins per line, and you get multipliers on all paying combination. In 9-6 double-double bonus, for example, multipliers for most four of a kinds is a 4. For the lowest four of a kinds, you only get 3. For full houses, you get 12, flushes, 10, straights, 8, different numbers for different goals. So the multipliers affect the next hand, not the last hand. So a full house pays the normal amount. But if you get the full house on, say, the third line out of 10, next time, whatever you get on that same line is multiplied. This changes strategies a lot. Now, for example, normally in double-double bonus, if you're dealt a full house with three aces, such as three aces and two fives, the right play is to throw the fives away and just hold the aces. Well, in this game, you get a multiplier of 12 if you get a full house. So the right play, by far, is to keep the full house. Now, and take the multiplier on the next hand. Now, the strategy is different based on the sum of the multipliers. So the lowest multiplier you can have is 10 on 10 play, meaning you have a multiplier of 1 on each hand. 1 kind is like 0. No multiplier at all is a multiplier of 1. The highest multiplier you can have is 120, which means you have a multiplier of 10. You'd get that on a dealt full house. In that particular game, it could be a dealt something else on another game. So there's 111 different possibilities in there, and sometimes not one isn't possible, like maybe 117, you can't get that. And some are really, really rare, such as you have to get five royals and five four aces on the same hand to get this particular multiplier. And of course, that's essentially impossible, but theoretically, once every zillion years, it could happen. So the strategy is different. You need 111 different strategies. Now, that's tough, but it's a highly skill. If you're playing in a casino, you don't want to play this game if you're only going to play a few hands. The reason for that is you start out with a multiplier of zero, so you're getting approximately a 50% return on the first hand because you're betting 10 coins but only getting paid 5 coins per line. So if you're only playing a few hands, that 50% on one of the hands is a huge hit. If you're going to play a couple thousand hands, doesn't matter much. Also, when you finish playing, you should play off all your multipliers. Because even if you were playing 10 play and had 9 ones and 1 2, like you got a high pair on one of them with a multiplier of 11, that gives you a 10% edge. And whatever game you're playing, a 10% edge when you're only betting 5 coins per line is a good deal. So we'll talk more about the Ultimate X strategy next week. But that's the game for this month. We already talked about what we're going to do next week. Let's talk about Mount Whitney. Last week, Mike and his son went up Mount Whitney so he could lose a backgammon game. Why don't you tell us about that?
How much time do we have left? 2 minutes? Okay, yeah. To give you some background, Mount Whitney is the tallest mountain in the continental United States. There are some bigger ones in Alaska. And it is 14,500 feet high. It's a 22-mile round-trip hike, which may not sound that much, but there's a lot of elevation gain, and it gets into some pretty thin air, which really saps your strength. So I did it with my 10-year-old son, his friend, who's also 10, and my son's friend's father, who is also a professional gambler. And we did it over 3 days, which is definitely taking your time, but we wanted the kids to acclimatize. So the first night we camped at what's called, what is it called? Outpost camp. The next night we went even higher to trail camp. And the day after that was our summit day. And that starts out, you're already way up there at this point. You're past the tree line and it's pretty cold. Starts out with what's called the 97 switchbacks, which is 97 switchbacks. It's a lot of back and forth gaining altitude. Finally, you get to the ridgeline and you can see the other side. And we went along the ridgeline and it was pretty windy and cold. But we got up there. It was a beautiful, clear day. And the weather right there on the summit, suddenly it wasn't so windy anymore. And my son did great. I was very proud of him. And he just got tons of compliments along the way because everyone else I saw there up there was a strong climbing adult, and here's a 10-year-old, and boy, was everybody impressed, including me. So big congratulations to my son there, and overall, a really great trip. We saw a lot of marmots and deer and grouse, and fortunately, no bears. So who knows what's next? I see a good climbing career in his future.
Very good. Did you play backgammon?
I forgot to mention that. My friend did bring up his backgammon set and some cards, but with the two kids, he was very good about playing games with them and teaching my son how to play backgammon. So we never got in any backgammon games.
All right. So he didn't lose backgammon games. Very good. I'm proud of him. So go out and hit Royal Flushes, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and wizardofodds.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. Our sponsors are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the Palms Casino Resort, the website videopoker.com, and the website wizardofodds.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.